Hi, everybody, and welcome back here for another little bite-sized political podcast on April the 24th, and hope this one finds you well. My thanks to my sponsors, quantumhypno.co.uk. Do check them out. There's going to be a show coming tomorrow. You'll be able to watch it with Sarah from Quantum Hypno and a guy called Dr. Sam, who's going to tell us all about the Bosnian pyramids, bigger and older than all the other pyramids in the world. Yes, check it out and then draw your own conclusions. Okay, I thought I'd start off today kind of differently than I do most days. And that is, I wanted to return to the scene of the crime. And by that, I reference Pearl Harbor. And now, I'm sure I've told you this before. I've been out to Hawaii and I've been to actually Pearl Harbor. And I remember vividly the day. I remember what it was like. I remember what I saw. And it's treated very much like 9/11, you know, when you take the little boat trip out to see where you're sitting on top of the surface and the wrecks are just underneath the water. And of course, Pearl Harbor was a moment of loss of thousands of lives. And it was the pivotal moment that basically sort of sparked the U.S. into war. Basically brought America into World War II. That was a result of that, a consequence of Pearl Harbor. There's just one problem. It was a false flag. It was an absolute false flag. I'm now adamant that just like 9/11, Pearl Harbor is not what we thought it was. It was instead a very cleverly constructed ruse which drew the Japanese, in fact, facilitated the Japanese into attacking America and giving the green light for America then to fully enter World War II. Now, one of the things I remember about going to Hawaii is how far away it is. I remember I flew to San Francisco to start with, had a few days there to rest up, and then the onward flight from San Fran to Oahu, the main island, so to speak, is it's about 4 or 5 hours. It's a long flight, and of course it's in the middle of the Pacific. So here's a question: why did President Roosevelt decide that the Pacific Fleet should be based indefinitely at Pearl Harbor in Hawaii instead of the usual berths on the U.S. West Coast? Now, there's lots of reasons why we should instantly question, why did he make that decision? Because, as I say, Hawaii, I mean, it's in the middle of the Pacific. It's surrounded by uninhabited waters, so it's susceptible to a surprise attack from any angle. By contrast, no surprise attack could have been launched if the Pacific Fleet had been anchored on the West Coast. Assailants would have encountered innumerable commercial vessels before reaching it. The other thing is that's really weird is at Pearl Harbor itself, the Pacific Fleet was boxed together, making them perfect targets for bombers. Another thing, in Hawaii, oil and other important supplies had to be brought over 2,000 miles because Pearl Harbor itself lacked adequate fuel and ammunition storage facilities. So the fleet could have been maintained on a superior war footing if kept on the West Coast. And then there's this, and again, anyone who's been there would have figured this, 37% of Hawaii's population was ethnically Japanese. So there was a danger of espionage and sabotage. And then the final point to make about, you know, the basing the fleet at Pearl Harbor was by keeping the fleet in Hawaii, that was keeping sailors well away from their families, and that was creating morale problems. Basically, U.S. Fleet Commander, a guy called O.J. Richardson, I think his name was, he was absolutely outraged by Roosevelt's decision and met with him on October 8th, 1940 to protest it. And in fairness to Richardson, he told Roosevelt why there's all these logical reasons why you shouldn't base the fleet in Pearl Harbor. Basically, Roosevelt waved these objections aside and simply said that by putting the fleet there, it would exert, quote, a restraining influence on the actions of Japan. Well, that didn't work out too well, now did it? So basically, Richardson said, and afterwards that he said, he got the impression that the U.S. president was determined to put the U.S. into the war if GB, if Great Britain, could hold out until he was re-elected. Funnily enough, some months later, Richardson was relieved of his command. Very, very unusual behavior. And of course, we know then, on that infamous day, December 7th, 1941, Roosevelt's actual pretext for basing the fleet there, namely, oh, it would keep the Japanese away. Well, that was the day that the event happened. So basically, as far as I can understand, Washington watched Japan prepare to attack Pearl Harbor, but it kept basically some key military personnel and intelligence people are out of the loop. That's basically how they set the thing up. Another key thing to consider regarding Pearl Harbor was that there were lots of warnings, actual warnings that it was going to happen, and these were all completely ignored. Perhaps one of the most egregious ones was back then a U.S. congressman called Martin Dees of Texas came into possession of a map revealing the Japanese plan to attack Pearl Harbor. He later wrote, "As soon as I got this document, I telephoned the Secretary of State, told him what I had. The Secretary directed me not to let anyone know about the map and stated that he'd call me as soon as he talked to President Roosevelt. In about an hour, he telephoned to say that he talked to Roosevelt and they agreed it would be very serious if any information concerning this map reached the news service. This was a matter of essential national defense. We had people like the Dutch military attaché in Washington personally warning the U.S. Army Chief of Staff, George Marshall, about the Pearl Harbor attack just days before the event. We had, for example, Brigadier General Elliot Thorpe, the U.S. military observer in Java, then under Dutch control. And again, in early December, the Dutch decoded the dispatch from Tokyo forecasting an attack in Hawaii. They passed it on to Thorpe, who considered it so vital, he sent it to Washington, and then the War Department told them to send no further warnings. So you can see that this whole thing was completely known about. They understood what was going to happen, but then it wasn't enough just to do that. At the same time, Pearl Harbor itself was inadequately defended. Deliberately so. At that time, huge numbers of planes that they needed were actually being lent to the UK. So of the 1,900 planes, I think were required, 1,700 of them were basically not available. So there was real problems. And then, of course, we get to the morning of December 7th. And when the attack actually happened, and it's pretty clear, I think, when you look at what occurred, that this was the 9/11 moment. So on that morning, December 7th, 1941, the Japanese came in. They basically took out on a horrific manner the Pacific Fleet, or a big percentage of the Pacific Fleet. And that gave Roosevelt the thing that he wanted. And the thing that he wanted was the pretext to enter World War II. And Japan gave him it. And if you go to 9/11, you could argue that the events of 9/11 gave George W. Bush the pretext he wanted to go to war with a large section of the Muslim world. So, and then you think about it more. I mean, we could talk about World War One as well. We could talk about the Lusitania, and we're coming up to an anniversary of that, and how that also was essentially a false flag. So I think there have been all these false flags looking back at it, and we're given one version of it. You know, well, Pearl Harbor, the infamous day when the Japanese came out of the sky low and fast and no one knew they were coming. Total fabrication. It was a complete setup, I believe, from start to finish. And in fact, you know, there are such similarities between Pearl Harbor and 9/11, because in the aftermath of Pearl Harbor, there was like a truther movement who tried to get the facts and information out. They were instantly dismissed, demonized, and all the rest of it, just like what happened in 9/11. So I think you know, there's a kind of pattern here where the war machine wants to be continually active, and it does what it has to do. And if that means sacrificing lives in Pearl Harbor, it will do it. And if it means sacrificing lives in New York, it will do it. Thanks for listening to this special.